We deal with, well, very, very strange happenings, ghosts and ghoulies, and specifically vampires. Now, Sean Manchester, the Reverend Sean Manchester, welcome to Into the Night. A lot of people might say that vampires are purely the stuff of Bram Stoker and Hammer horror films. You say not.
No. Vampires have been recorded from the beginning of time. Every culture, every civilization has documented the existence of these awesome creatures of supernatural evil. It's only in recent years that the church and the society that we live in, which is mostly a materialistic one, has felt embarrassed by the admission that there can be such things as vampires.
Why have they been embarrassed by this admission?
Because we live in a materialistic age when the belief in things supernatural is... singularly unfashionable.
Well, they accept other things. I think generally accepted amongst the churches is a belief in the evil spirits and Ouija boards and so forth. So why not vampires? Is it because the vampire legend has been camped up so much in Hammer horror films?
Possibly, but even the belief in demonic entities and evil spirits, as you call them, has been swept under the carpet by a lot of church leaders and clerics. Very few are now expert in the ministry of exorcism, whereas in past centuries most priests were exorcists.
But you've seen vampires?
Oh yes.
How many have you seen?
I've come eyeball to deathly eyeball with at least two, possibly three, and many more from a distance perhaps.
What does a vampire look like? What is a vampire? Let's have a definition.
Well, of course, I'm not talking about human beings, living people, who are vampiristic in their behavior, who are sometimes referred to as vampiroids, nor am I talking about psychic vampires or bloodlusting psychotics who suffer from a disease which makes them have a sexual thirst for blood.
These are all human beings,
these are
people who are alive.
These are living people who have a problem, either mental or otherwise. I'm talking about a supernatural entity, a demonic form which is born of the devil. Indeed, the devil is undead. A person, not a person in fact, a being which is neither living nor dead. This is the definition of a vampire.
But a lot of people are going to say, come on, this is Christopher Lee, you know, Peter Cushing, Bela Lugosi territory.
Well, of course, the makers of the film Dracula and its offspring had to do some research, and they went to the same places that Stoker himself went to the archives.
So all those films are actually based on ancient
knowledge? They're based on a fundamental idea, which of course is true, but it's been so embellished as to be almost unrecognizable.
Right, so you've come up, as you say, eyeball to deathly eyeball, to two vampires. What does a vampire look like? You speak, or you have spoken about the famous, what you describe as the famous Highgate vampire. Briefly, I know it's a very long and involved story, because I've discussed it with you before, but briefly, what did the Highgate vampire involve and look like?
Well, the Highgate vampire, when I first looked upon it in its tomb in the Lebanon Circle, in the center of the old Highgate Cemetery, looked like a several-day-old corpse, and had in fact been resting for some century or so. Not in Highgate Cemetery, but it had been in the cemetery for about a century, but it was some centuries older than that. But in fact, it looked like, I suppose, a three-day-old corpse. And I realized that this wasn't a being as we know it, either dead or alive. This was a demonic form, a manifestation from the dark world of the devil.
Why did you realize that? What made you think it was a vampire and not just a three-day-old corpse?
Because it could leave its tomb without displacing anything. It could manifest.
Did you see it doing that?
It was witnessed by many residents, passers-by, by many people in the general area. On one occasion, when it was by the north gate and the headlights of a car dissolved it, it passed through the iron railings with no problem. A corporeal body or a living person can't do these things. Only a supernatural entity can, as it were, metamorphose.
Right.
Transmogrify.
To cut a long story short, you dispatched this to eternal peace.
It relocated to a neo-Gothic derelict mansion in the same area, and I used the ancient and approved method to release the demon and exorcise it properly.
What is that?
In this case, it was finally exorcised by the means of cremation, the incineration of fire.
Did you put a stake through its heart as well?
Yes, to be on the safe side, as there had been previous opportunities which were missed to lay this demon, as it were, cast it out, as of course Christians are asked to do. Mark chapter 16, verse 17, believers shall cast out demons in his name. I wanted to be absolutely certain that the Highgate vampire wouldn't rise again.
Did it?
Having missed the opportunity once when I viewed it in its tomb.
Did it rise again?
Not after the exorcism at the Gothic mansion.
What happened after cremation? Did it sort of dissolve into some strange miasma? Or?
Yes. It very quickly fell into the condition that it ought by right be, which is dust.
In front of your very eyes?
Yes. And what remained was consumed in flames.
All right.
And this was recorded on film.
There is film of this?
Yeah, well, panchromatic stills, yes. One of which appeared in my book, The Highgate Vampire, and others, as you know, have appeared on television.
And there were witnesses?
There was a witness at the time, and of course it was witnessed on film.
Well, Reverend Sean Manchester with me till midnight. If you have any particular questions on this extraordinary phenomenon, do give us a call on 0716 374 343, and put it to him personally. This is Thomas Dolby. Thomas Dolby, I scare myself. We've established some interesting things so far. We're not talking, when we're talking about vampires, about the vampiristic, about human beings. We're talking about the undead. If vampires do exist, we have a man who definitely says they do in the studio with me, the Reverend Sean Manchester, who says, and I quote him, that he has come eyeball to deathly eyeball with at least two, possibly many more. One of the vampires you did, we've got calls on a line. People want to ask you questions. I'll come to them in a second. But one of the vampires, or the creatures you came up against, Sean, turned into a spider in front of you.
That was one of its demonic manifestations. Of course, metamorphosis is one of the peculiarities of the true undead.
Must have been a bit frightening.
Oh, yes. Terrifying.
And what happened? Did it all of a sudden just whoosh, become a spider? Or?
No, I only recognized it when it was already in that condition, but it was not an arachnid of the normal size. It was more the size of a large cat.
A spider the size of a large cat, that must have been.
At least that's how it seemed. You must remember that this was in the dead of night, and a very dull light afforded any illumination. But it was undoubtedly a gigantic spider, and upon exorcism, there was no doubt as to the fact that it was demonic.
Right, some callers on the line. Desmond Pay, is it? Hello, Desmond.
Good evening.
Where are you calling from?
Well, I'm on a radio phone in the lorry cab.
Oh, I hope you're parked.
I certainly am.
Oh, good. Right. What would you like to ask the Reverend Sean Manchester about vampires?
Well, the question I was thinking of was that this Highgate vampire,
mm-hmm.
Are there any recorded victims of it?
Oh, yes. In fact, the second vampire I exorcised was indeed a victim of the original source, the Highgate vampire. And there were many other victims who were none the worse from the contagion, because they hadn't entered into the undead condition themselves before the Highgate vampire was properly exorcised. The person who became undead in their turn did so before the original Highgate vampire was dispatched. But animals too were drained of blood and destroyed in their hundreds in the general area, all of which is recorded
by this Oscars. Vampire.
Oh yes.
Do you believe in all this, Desmond?
Well, I'm sort of skeptical. I don't really believe in it. On the other side, I do think there are things that we don't know too much about, or we don't want to know too much about.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Mishenko, where are you calling from with an exotic name like that?
Essex.
Oh, not so exotic. Never mind. What's your question to our vampire expert, the Reverend Sean Manchester?
Yes, I'd like to ask, why would he want to kill or destroy, as he would probably put it, these creatures? They're just, like, so fabulous, like unicorns. Why would you want to kill them?
Well, in fact, they're not like unicorns. Unicorns are mythological creatures which belong to folklore and fairy tales, and they are quite beautiful in their the artistic imagination. Vampires are not creatures. They are not part of creation in the way we know it. And I neither kill nor destroy them. I exorcise them. I cast them out. They are demonic entities. They are the devil's undead. And if it can be seen in any form as a soul, it is a tormented soul. And I am releasing the tormented soul to find the peace of true death.
Yeah, but how do you know that? I mean, you're focusing on the Christian point of view. Really,
of course, I am a Christian.
But, I mean, vampires are older than Christianity ever existed.
They are indeed. The vampires go back to the beginning of civilization, and throughout their history, they have drunk the blood of the living and caused the living to die and to expire. And they have ruthlessly preyed upon those who sleep quietly in their beds, whether they're men, women, or children, sparing neither age nor sex. How can these be beautiful creatures? They are demonic, evil creatures, spawn of the devil.
Well, have you actually ever... Or maybe you don't think it's possible. Have you ever talked with a vampire at all?
I've never held a conversation with a demon. I'm too busy trying to protect myself and others from the malignant emanations and influence.
They're not great conversationalists, then?
They don't hold conversations at all. They prey upon yours and my blood.
Are they conscious of you? Well, I mean, you said earlier on that it had you eyeball to deathly eyeball. It looked at you. Did it know that you were stalking it down?
In the way that a predator is conscious, yes.
What about all the mythology about garlic and everything? Does that have anything in it?
I don't understand properly the power of garlic. I know that the ancients, the ancient Egyptians, for example, were aware of the enormous... healing properties of garlic, and they actually revered it in their temples.
Do they fear garlic? I mean, did you carry garlic around with you when you were stalking these vampires?
It has to be said that I found that the use of garlic, both in the wildflower form and in the bulb form, did prove efficacious as a repellent. I think this is not due to any other than the chemical effect of garlic. Most of the symbols I use, of course, are Christian, and it's the faith behind the symbols which are effective, not the symbols themselves. Garlic isn't a symbol, but I think there's a chemical, astringent nature to garlic, which the odoriferous smell, perhaps, which...
They have a kind of an acute sense of smell.
Well, incense has the same effect. The correct form of incense would equally act as a repellent.
Now, these are blood-sucking animals. Here we are in the age of...
Beings, not animals.
All right, blood-sucking beings.
Mm.
Supernatural beings.
Yes, supernatural beings.
Here we are in the age of AIDS.
Yes.
Would a vampire be conscious of AIDS-contaminated blood?
Yes, according to undead lore, the vampire appears, at least, to avoid any blood which is defiled, and down the ages has always chosen blood which belongs to the more innocent and the more pure. A blood which has some sort of disease would be almost certainly avoided by a predatory vampire.
Another caller on the line. Is it Paul from Gloucester?
Yeah.
Hello, Paul. What's your question?
I'd like to know how you got involved in vampire hunting.
Literally thrown into the deep end, although I was born in Newstead Abbey Park and raised there for some time, which of course is shrouded with mystery and tales of hauntings. But it was in the late 60s and the early 70s that I came upon the Highgate vampire through two convent schoolgirls of the age of 16 who literally saw the manifestation rising from its tomb. And one of the girls, some two or three years later, was to fall victim, quite literally, and had to be rescued.
In the jugular vein?
Yes, she became perniciously anemic. She betrayed all the classical symptoms, started sleepwalking, started actually having the most dreadful nightmares where she believed she was being visited.
How widespread is this? How widespread are vampires? How widespread are victims of vampires in the country now? Are there many people who are getting anemic and are sleepwalking? Are they not just maybe not very...
It's sometimes difficult to discern those who are victims of vampires and those who are victims of something else and perhaps are suffering something psychosomatic. It's equally difficult to know if somebody is demonically possessed or if they're actually mentally disturbed. But that the fact that there are a large number of people who are mentally disturbed doesn't mean to say that there are not some who are genuinely demonically possessed.
And you get letters from people, presumably, do you, who think they're...
I have a very large mailbag, and some of which do lay claim to being aware of vampiric activity.
All right, I'll come back to you very soon. If you actually want to put a question to the Reverend Sean Manchester, Britain's foremost vampire hunter, whether you believe or disbelieve, 071-637-4343. Sympathy for the Devil on Halloween. Nicky Campbell into the night. The Reverend Sean Manchester is my guest. He is, well, I suppose you are Britain's foremost expert in vampires.
Yes, that's right.
And some more people on the line. Doubters, disbelievers, believers, who knows? First of all, it's Chris Hill. You've got an interesting story from Dorset, Chris.
Hello? Yes.
Hello, yes. What's your story, briefly?
Well, no, very, very, very simply. Some years ago, myself and my wife had a small holding in Dorset, and we had a particular breed of sheep called a Dorset Horn, which is a fairly old breed, and it had horns. The unique thing about the breed is they don't have lambs. They basically have two sets of lambs every 18 months, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is quite unusual, makes them very profitable for farmers to have.
Yeah.
So, anyway, we had about 12 ewes, and they had lambs about this time of year.
And what happened to them?
Right. 12 ewes, and they had on average 1.5 lambs each, so that's about 18, 20 lambs, right? Six of these died within about 4 days of being born.
What of?
That is what we never discovered. We called the vet in.
What were the symptoms?
Well, the symptoms were nothing. They were just lying on the ground. Ultimately, the only thing they could find was sort of tooth marks on their throat, right? Now, it wasn't a dog, because it's all a bit sort of serious, this stuff. A dog would bite them, you know, and there'd be sort of, you know, evidence. They'd whatever, you know, they'd be torn, right?
Yeah.
But these were just dead. And so we thought, okay, they've been jumping around and stabbed themselves.
What did the vet say?
The vet said he didn't know why. There was no evidence. He did a post-mortem on some of them and said there's no evidence
okay.
why they've died. They just dropped dead.
Let's put it to the expert. Reverend...
Hold on. There's a bit more.
Quickly, then.
I then spoke to a very old shepherd, a guy of about 90, who said, yes, that happens. There's only one thing you do. And I said, well, what? He said, you get a ewe stick and you, any lamb, you wipe their necks with a ewe stick. Right. So I said, well, where do you get a ewe stick from? Well, you get it from the local graveyard, where they have yew trees. I thought, well, this is rubbish. And apparently this is an old Dorset spell.
Okay.
That they lost lambs this way, but to protect them, they rub their necks with a yew stick.
All right. Chris has made an interesting point there with a little story. Does this ring true with you?
Yes. Something very similar happened in the early 80s in the area of Finchley, the Prime Minister.
Oh, I lived there.
Do you really?
Yes.
It wasn't sheep on this occasion, but it certainly was goats and other animals.
What, are you blaming the Prime Minister?
Not on this occasion, but that was certainly a vampire active in the area, which I successfully tracked down to the Great Northern London Cemetery. Mm. And the RSPCA autopsy on the goats and other animals that were victims showed that there was not even enough blood remaining in the bodies for a proper analysis. What I'd be interested to know is, were the sheep, the lambs on this occasion, were they drained of blood?
Well, I think he's gone, actually, but that I spoke to him beforehand, and that would seem to be the case.
Yeah. Yes, well, that would be an indication that the...
vampirism.
The predator was vampiristic, if not a vampire itself.
Andy Price is on the line. Good evening, Andy.
Hiya.
You're not too frightened, are you?
Well, no, not really.
What's your question?
I would just like to ask the Reverend if he is actually a recognised church cleric, and if he is, does the church commend what he's doing?
Well, I'm an ordained priest in the Old Catholic Church, which is both an apostolic and Catholic faith, with an unbroken line of succession back to the first Apostle Peter. And the Church, of course, down the ages, has been first and foremost in exorcising and dealing with the problem of vampirism.
The Church don't recognise vampires, do they? The Orthodox Church, don't they?
The Orthodox, indeed, you've hit the nail on the head. The Orthodox churches in the eastern parts of Europe, of course, still do openly recognise the existence of vampires. The Western churches, namely the Catholic and Anglican churches, behind closed doors will, of course, admit to such phenomenon, but are embarrassed in the present day where they're wooing the popular and modern vote, as it were, are embarrassed to come right out and admit to what they've been supporting down the centuries.
You were with Cardinal Basil Hume the other day in some ecumenical function or something?
That's right. 3 days ago, I was part of a multi-faith celebration at the Cathedral Hall.
Did you discuss vampires with him?
There wasn't time to discuss vampires. I mean, you must understand, as a priest and an exorcist, I do a lot more than talk about vampires. Mm. And
but there's an interesting aspect of what you do.
Yes, and of course, priests that have a problem which point in the direction of vampirism obviously would come to me.
Right, we've got another caller on the line. It's Graham Wilson. Hello, Graham.
Hello.
What would you like to ask the Reverend Sean Manchester?
Well, frankly, I don't really go along with all this ordained and going back to the first apostle business. I'd like to ask...
What do you go along with, then?
Well, I'd just like to ask the so-called Reverend.
Why do you say so-called?
I think there's a bit of a sort of self...
Have you not heard of the Old Catholic Church?
Sorry?
Have you not heard of the Old Catholic Church?
The Old Catholic Church?
Yes.
If you just let me say what I want to say... If I go along to the church, I mean, I'm not a regular churchgoer, but if I do go along on a Sunday, if this is such a great danger, you know, why isn't everybody saying, you know, watch out for vampires and everything?
Well, I'd have thought...
Why is it just you that knows about it all of a
sudden? Well, it isn't just me, of course, because the greatest authority this century was the Reverend Montague Summers, who was also an old Catholic priest.
Well, he doesn't preach in my church.
No, because he's been dead since 1948, that's why.
Yes. Well, why aren't people given sort of instructions throughout the church to tell us about this sort of thing if it's all...
Well, I could put the question around the other way. Why were they given the instructions for 13 centuries?
Well, maybe they thought there was something to be gained from it, like perhaps you do. I don't know. Maybe you see some sort of...
Well, I'll tell you why. Because in Mark chapter 16, verse 17, it says, "Believers will cast out demons in my name." The vampire is a demon and a pariah even amongst demons.
Okay, go on. So what are you saying, Graham?
People can twist around the Bible to say whatever they like, can't they? I mean, they can say, you know, buy more video recorders by quoting chapter and verse of such.
Yes, but I'm not saying buy more video recorders, am I? I'm saying cast out demons.
Okay, hang on.
Something much more ridiculous than that. You're saying that, you know, there's a Highgate vampire and we should all watch out for big spiders in the dark and things like that.
Graham.
I think you're letting down the church. You see, the church should be attracting more people these days.
But not through popular...
If people like you are saying this sort of thing, how are we going to get young people to come to the church and things like that?
Well, we certainly won't get more people...
I'm disappointed with the BBC and letting you come on.
Well, we certainly won't get more people by dispensing with what the church is supposed to be doing. And in the Synoptic Gospels, most of the healings that Christ performed were, in fact, exorcisms.
Well, that's arguable, I suppose. But Graham,
yes.
This gentleman here, the Reverend Sean Manchester, has seen vampires with his own eyes. He has been eyeball to deathly eyeball.
Well, I've seen pink elephants on occasions, but I don't go on radio and talk about it.
Yes, but did those pink elephants attack other people and drain their blood?
Well, actually, yes, they did on one or two occasions.
Well, I've dealt with the victims.
Thank you.
Because I had too much to drink.
Thank you very much, Graham. Thank you very much for calling. There we are, Graham Wilson, who I think is a bit of a skeptic. This is Bobby Valentino. Spirits in the Night, Bruce Springsteen. Time running out on this. It's 5 minutes to the witching hour. Halloween, will you be off to a graveyard tonight, stalking out vampires? Sean Manchester, Britain's leading vampire expert?
No, on the contrary, I'll be preparing for tomorrow, which of course is All Saints Day and far more important to someone like myself. The origins of Halloween lie in the distant past when the celebrations were held by the Druids in honour of the Lord of the Dead. the Lord of the Dead, whose festival fell on 1st of November, mm-hmm. is marked by the entry of winter.
So tomorrow is much more important to you. Well, I want to get some more calls in. Andy from Staffordshire, hello.
Hello, Nicky.
What's your question? To Sean Manchester.
Yeah. How would I know if I was actually possessed by the said being, and what would happen to me if I was exorcised?
If you were possessed, you had been somebody that had probably been dabbling in the dark occult and the black arts, and had invited the entity upon yourself. Those people who are...
But you can't help it, can you? If this thing has a visitation, makes a visitation upon you...
You can make it very easy. Those who dabble in the black arts...
Make it
very easy. They open doors.
Hang on, what are you going to say, Andy?
I say I don't.
Then it's unlikely that you would become possessed by a blood-sucking demonic entity.
Okay, you happy now?
Sort of.
Okay, thanks for calling. David, is it Marshall?
That's right, yes.
Hi, David, where are you calling from?
From Belfast. I'm a Christian. I believe in the devil, and I believe that Jesus is stronger than the devil. I agree with that. But I'm a medical student, and it's some of what the reverend, or so-called reverend, is being saying sounds a bit strange. I'm wondering, has he seen or been receiving medical treatment from anyone?
Have I been receiving medical treatment?
No.
What's your problem exactly?
Just some of the things that you've been saying seem mm-hmm. to be suggestive of various mental illnesses, and I do agree with the principle of I believe in the devil and so on, but just some of the things that you've been saying do sound a bit strange. And
well, if you're willing to believe in the miracles of saints and saintly people, and in the beatific visions of, for example, the Blessed Virgin, as in Lourdes, why not also believe that the devil can manifest demonic supernatural figures, which are equally awesome? I mean, once you start believing in God, you must believe in the devil. Once you start believing in angels, you must start believing in demons.
David, do you believe in vampires?
I don't know, and I think that... The so-called reverend should see a psychiatrist.
But this, no, I mean, you can't say that, because he has been eyeball to deathly eyeball with at least two, maybe many more.
So I've saw certain schizophrenics that I've talked to.
Yes, but they said that of our Lord when he raised the dead in Lazarus, and when he changed water into wine and walked on water himself and cured lepers and made the blind see. Wouldn't they say the same of people who claimed that they saw that happen?
Do you get a lot of people, Sean, who point at you and say that you're mad, say that you're a charlatan, say that you're deluded?
Fewer than you might expect. Fewer people scoff nowadays than once might have done.
We have one more caller, a gentleman who plays in Dionne Warwick's band. What's your name?
Hi, Rob Shirok.
Hi, Rob. How you doing?
Very well. I'd like to ask Reverend Manchester if he is familiar with the three Anne Rice novels that made up the Vampire Chronicles.
I am.
And is there any accuracy to the depiction of vampirism in those books? For instance, they had covens in different cities throughout the world. Also, there was a society in London here that was chasing some of the vampires down. Is there any accuracy to this?
The description of the vampire in the Rice novels seems to lack authenticity, but the connection between Satanism, the black arts, and the cult of the vampire is very real. Satanism is a cause, the effect of which can sometimes be the vampire.
We're running out of time. Just broaden it briefly. Is witchcraft, are the black arts and covens and all sorts of things that we tend to read about in the news of the world, is it a problem in this country at the moment? Is it growing?
Not only in this country, but throughout the Western world, there appears to be a satanic revival.
Are there enough people like you, emissaries of good, churchmen who are counteracting that, or do some people just tend to turn a blind eye to it?
No, I'm seen as a traditionalist, and it's something of an anachronism, but of course... unless there are more people within the church who are willing to stand up and be counted instead of trying to woo popularism and have pop groups in churches rather than getting on with the business mm-hmm. of casting out demons and healing people.
We're rescuing people
from the dark forces.
Running out of time, just very briefly, in a couple of words, can you assure people tonight that they are safe from vampires?
Yes, if they turn to the light and turn away from their own shadow and do not dabble in the dark arts, they'll have very little risk of coming face to face
with a giant spider.
Or indeed something worse, yes.
Sean Manchester, thanks for joining me tonight.
You're most welcome.